hopefully...
HMT, October 21st.
Steal 5 pounds of this car.
Yeah.
Take his knife and...
that's funny.
Then we, you know, we dip it and we figured, oh, we're just evaporation loss.
Yeah.
It wasn't a lot. It was like 50 gallons a month. Out of a 500-gallon tank. And
yeah.
And we go through a lot of fuel.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, when I lived in Alaska, fuel was getting really expensive. This was probably around 2005, 2006. And I kept losing a lot of fuel, diesel out of my tank because we burned with heating fluid. And I just filled it up again after I thought it went fast, but I used it for my equipment. And then, like, within a weekend, it was gone. The snow started to melt. And so somebody had come up. I saw the footprints. And they had taken it, but they left the hose in the snow, and they didn't shut the valve. So they took like maybe 5 or 10 gallons, and then the rest of it was all went down my driveway into the ditch. So I had to pay like $500 for a road permit, rent an excavator. I had a dump truck, and close it off, seal off the ditch, dig it all out, treat it. I had a big treating pit there for years. Nightmare.
Trying to tell people.
Holy mackerel.
What's that?
I was out vacuuming. I don't know. I shot back around my house.
The old days.
Well, you take the stuff off
the roof. Phone up and registered as it's showing
in the garden, somebody has to excavate all the dirt.
Nightmare.
That was the process of selling it.
Yeah, because you had to deal with that if due diligence was done.
Yeah.
So nobody's going to nail that, yeah.
Welcome to AT&T's teleconference service.
The guy had his 10-day waiting period and signed everything yesterday, so it's done. I'm out.
To join the conference at the host,
I have to be out of the house by the 18th of November.
Please enter your host pass.
Yeah.
Did you buy another house? Or you?
I've had another house in Idaho since January.
Are you heading back then? Or
please
no?
Enter the security code followed by the pound sign.
Wow.
I'll pull Kelly Moore. Or who was the other one? Laura Jackson.
You entered 4, 8, 4, 9, 5, 8.
Sent some emails about a week and a half
accept,
later.
Press 1.
Because, Laura
there
no
are
hearing.
3
wow.
Participants on the call, including you. You are joining your
Kelly's
conference as a host.
Month.
For a menu of available DMs, press
pardon me?
Star
I say I'm
pound.
On medium.
Oh,
wow.
Thank you.
I'm going to have a problem finding a place to live after I bail. I'm starting to move more stuff. I've already got half of my junk over there already. But, I got too much stuff. I got another boat to sell. Maybe I'll have 2 boats over.
All right, who's on the line? Anybody on the phone?
Yeah, good morning, this is Lance Kruzik.
Hey, Lance.
Hey, Lance, sir, ODFW had more phone problems this morning. It's Cameron.
That's what I figured.
This is a new phone, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's just that other one.
Well, one reason that... Okay. Explain what they had phones to buy, had extra money at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah.
These were not available, and the company advised him to buy those. Mm. None of them have worked.
Should we put them there? Like expensive phones, too, right? He just said $2,000 for a phone.
Yeah, let's remember we were asked him to put one in here, and he says, well, who's going to pay for it?
Yeah.
I says, well, I guess not.
Should we put a piece of tape on it? Is somebody else on the line? Lemon.
Yeah, this is Mark Fridge with Power Planning Council.
Hello, Mark. Good morning.
Just listening in.
Yeah, thanks. Anybody else? Cool. Sounds like there were just 3. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started here. September HMT minutes. We've got comments from a couple of folks. Revised the minutes. Carrie, you sent those out a couple days ago?
Yes.
Right. You can take a look at those. Sure. But it incorporated all the comments, so unless there's anything else.
No, it looked great.
Awesome. Go ahead and approve those. Outstanding action items. We had a couple from previous months. One was the Lieberg Dam repairs. I got an update from Lisa McLaughlin not too long ago that said repairs are going pretty well. Let me pull it up here real quick. I think she gave an end date. But we can actually take that off of future action items. We can provide other updates in the future, but there's no action for folks in this group. So Lisa said that repairs to roll gate number one, which is the highway side of Leeburg, are on track. They plan to conduct the final wet testing in early November. Testing will be completed with stop logs in place, so they do not anticipate drastic changes in the lake level. So the hatchery intake should not be affected for Leeburg. She says, however, we may have trouble keeping within our designated ramping rate downstream of the dam. They'll be submitting a notification to FERC ahead of time with the fish agency's CC'd for the potential of a ramp rate deviation.
Up or down?
Downstream.
I mean, increasing the ramp rate or decreasing the ramp
rate? Oh, she didn't say.
So if they've got stop logs in place to test the roll gate, it probably means, I'm guessing they'd be releasing less water or water more slowly. So
I would go down? Assume so.
If they've got a way to, that was the problem with the other one, they didn't have a way to put stop logs in, so they must have modified something.
Sounds like,
because they took the stop logs out a number of years ago, and so probably they're going to stop the water, then operate the roll gate to see if it's functioning. So it would mean less water.
Without load.
I don't know enough about it, but if it's a very dramatic increase in flow, we've got 223 reds down below Leeburg, and they're in the gravel.
Yeah.
Just below the dam.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want to wash them away. I know they're almost all hatchery fish offspring, but
yeah,
that's right. What's saving the day for most of the upper Willamette. So.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we'll see. She said that she'll CC folks if that looks like it's going to occur. She said it's a potential right now. The last thing on here is that if all goes well with the testing, roll gate number one will be fully commissioned and fully functional by mid to late November. Replacement of roll gate number three motor on the hatchery side will begin in September 2016. Will be completed in the fall. Same drill as what happened this year.
September 2016.
Summer 2016.
Oh, summer. Sorry. Or September.
Okay, it will be completed in the fall.
Okay. Our greatest success at Leeburg was in extracting hatchery origin fish during September this year.
Right.
That's where we. That's how we got nearly 200 more than 200 hatchery fish. I didn't bring that, but a lot of hatchery fish came out.
And to do that, you wanted flow.
You wanted flow on that side to attract fish to the ladder. So we need to check the timing, what they're talking about when they say fall.
Yeah. So maybe beneficial to, if it's possible, push that one back by a few months, have them start earlier.
Start earlier.
Be done by September.
Right.
Would be nice. Okay. Do you want me to ask Lisa about that cam, or?
I'm happy to do it, or if you've already got her speed dial.
Yeah, I'll check it out there about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No problem. Can you take it out of that, Karen? Thanks. All right.
So when will river left repairs occur? Mm-hmm. Conflict.
Yeah,
with,
some exact dates. And with a preference for finishing in September, or before September.
You know, it might be the way they screwed up this year where they started and stopped, that if we have a desire to not have them close it off in August and September, that they could just hop 60 days and come back in October.
If they can do that,
yeah. Because that's, I know, you know, we thought they were going to have the gate, you know, the dam was going to be closed for months this summer and then just stop for a while.
Yeah, right.
And, so they might be able to just sort of leave it open for us.
Mm-hmm.
They do a lot of stuff like that. So.
Cool. Yeah, that'd be another possibility. Okay. The other action item on here, 2.2, was the Willamette water management strategy based on temperature and flow, something that we've tossed around at the past couple of meetings, maybe mirroring or taking points from what we do on the Rogue and adapting that for the Willamette. Chris Walker said he would take the lead on that. He's going to start putting together a team this winter in December. Cam, I think you mentioned you were going to check with Tom.
And I did not yet.
Okay. Maybe about his availability. I know it was discussed last month that maybe Tom would have the expertise to help direct
sure.
some of that
he
work.
He didn't make the meeting, so he got... No, it makes perfect sense that I could talk to him. Tom, are you on the phone? Tom?
No, it must not be. But yeah, we'll revisit that in December with Mr. Walker and bring that up. Okay. Any other action items that folks want to address?
I don't remember whether the checking in with Craig Banner on the steelhead egg transfer from Skamania Hatchery in the Washougal is an action item. I checked with Craig Banner to see if there are any appreciable risks with those, and he says no. They'll be checked. They'll be tested for all the pathogens, the same as any other group of fish. And apparently, and I wasn't aware of this, we fairly routinely get batches of eggs and fish from other facilities for special purposes. And it's just a normal process.
That's what we pay those guys for, right? I mean, no, we that's what I was saying. The only time we do it with trout all the time.
Right.
And so it's, the only issue is stock. We don't get to move stocks anymore except Skamania, steelhead, or trout. Right. And so, you know, you just shuffle them around. But the, I mean, we move fish, eggs all over the place.
For trout.
For things.
What about for a spring chinook?
Well, there we go. If we can't move stocks, I mean, it's a genetics issue. If we see that's Skamania are actually exotic. What's the exotic?
Non-endemic.
It's they're outside of the area stocked in just for harvest. They're not meant to be compatible with anything. That's of course that's always the major stink on it. But so we can put Skamanias are stocked everywhere. That's the summer steelhead of choice.
Right.
And so that's not a big deal.
Hey, John, this is Brett. I just want to let you know I'm here. I thought it started at 10.
Hey, Brett. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, how's it going?
Good.
And I've been in contact with Skamania. They called the other day, and we're still on board if we need some eggs. So we're still getting adults, and we're just going to kind of keep monitoring it, and we'll probably get a small portion from them anyway.
So you've got, what do you, 650 fish now? Is that right?
No, probably 450 pairs on hand.
Okay.
If we get 650 pairs, we'll probably be okay.
Okay.
Nice.
I have about 80 fish here at Minto.
So, with some of the concerns we've had with summer steelhead, are you guys concerned at all that the summer steelhead that we have in the Willamette now, somewhat locally adapted, bringing in kind of a fresher stock, increasing stray rates?
I don't think it occurs. The practice is that they don't incorporate natural origin summer run. They're few and far between anyway in their broodstock. It's the Skamania broodstock, and it's hatchery fish. It's a hatchery stock. So it's probably in many respects just identical to all of the other uses of the Skamania stock everywhere else. It's outplanted in Washington and Oregon. It's got demonstrably much lower reproductive success spawning naturally, like less than 10% the reproductive fitness of a wild summer run where they occur contemporaneously.
Right.
So they're not locally adapted or even somewhat locally adapted. They can't be if they're simply released from the hatchery and then brought back into the hatchery as adults. They experience the kinds of natural selection that you're thinking of.
So. We were going to just use those eggs we got from Skamania to fill an allocation for another facility so they wouldn't be released here and they're kept for our production, which would eventually could potentially be our broodstock. So, if that helps.
Oh, what is that other allocation, Brett?
I was probably going to send them to Willamette. Dan needs, for the Middle Fork, they need 250,000 eggs, if I remember correctly, and that'd be an easy one. And he likes to have earlier eggs, and they spawn sooner anyway. So it helps him get those fish to size. So it might be kind of a win-win just to give him that early allocation, and then we could use our eggs to fill our allocations and our brood stock, or I guess our production, which, like I said, ultimately is our brood stock, and then the rest of them.
Cool. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Cam. Okay, moving on to updates. Marion Forks and Minto. Greg, what do you got going on?
Up for Marion Forks, obviously, like everybody else, it's a warm, dry year. We're dealing with warmer water, bigger fish, and less water available. We're kind of looking through some options and scenarios of possibly moving some fish out to make sure that we've got adequate flow for our stock of fish. Generally, we would be moving them down to Minto. Down to Minto, we've kind of got a couple issues with a DEQ permit, and also yesterday with a big safety visit with the Corps, dealing with some of the safety issues. So, going well, but more to come. Collection of Mintos dropped down. We're seeing a few summer steelhead trickle in, and we received 5 coho this week, so we'll start to see some of those. I think there's only about 100 over Bennett, so I don't anticipate seeing a whole lot of those this year. Other than that, we're just status quo.
What are you guys doing with the coho, Greg?
They're just euthanized.
One of the things that emerged this year is our attempts to get the weirs in place on Marion Creek and Horn Creek. And I know we brought this up at multiple meetings, but the picket spacing on the weirs that I put in on Horn Creek to control the numbers of fish that spawn in Horn Creek and avoid red superposition is the same as the picket spacing on Marion Creek. And in both cases, my crews saw fish impinged, inserted into the pickets and dead on both facilities. Both the Marion Creek weir that protects the most of the water supply, and on the Horn Creek weir that protects spawner density. Yeah. And Greg Gillum watched one fish go through the picket spacing.
Wow.
On the Horn Creek weir, he watched it happen. So yeah.
These are adult females?
These are adult, well, he doesn't know the sex, but it was an adult fish. It was bigger than a jack, it was smaller than a jack. A big fish wouldn't make it through, but a small 4-year-old would. So that's by extension. He never saw that happen on the Marion Creek weir, but he saw it happen on the Horn Creek weir. The picket spacing is the same. The same it's thing must be happening on both facilities. Yeah. If we want to protect the water supply for the Marion Forks hatchery on Marion Creek, we need a better weir in place, and it would be ideal if it happened sooner rather than later. We've been talking about it now at least the 3 years since Greg brought it up with me. Dragging on a long time. Let's get on the ground on that. That can't be that big a deal.
How wide is it?
Greg, 40 yards? 30 yards at Marion Creek?
Yeah, between 30 and 40. The current position of the Marion Creek weir was always kind of an ideal because it was more of a flat area, but it seems to have scoured out over the last four years or so, and it's getting to be a little deeper and a lot more dangerous than we really like it to be. I'd like some sort of semi-permanent or permanent structure that's closer up to the intake that would be, you know, obviously safer to put it in and out and obviously keep fish below the intake and keep all the disease issues we want, keep out from up there. I don't think you want to attach it to the current log boom situation that gives us our elevation for our intake, but something just downstream. And I'll say that this year we probably outplanted more smaller type males than I've seen in a long time. It just seemed like a real, real strong, either small 4-year-olds or maybe a big 3-year-old return. But a lot more of those, you know, 640 to 700 ice fish.
So, benefit would be increasing the available spawning habitat in Marion Creek. It's a nice looking creek with a great water supply, hence its use for the hatchery. So moving the existing weir to a permanent structure further upstream would free up 100-plus yards of really nice-looking spawning habitat. That's where we see the reds of the fish that escape through. So, anyway, I think there are multiple good reasons to get started on a design for that weir. We, unfortunately, for my interests, can't do it on Horn Creek. We'll have to continue with a temporary weir somehow. I'll have to make tighter picket spacing because that's on Forest Service land, and I need a Forest Service permit to put that weir in place, and they'll never let me do anything that's
ugly. Oh, so Marion Creek is not on Forest Service land?
I don't know anything about that. It might be.
Because that was my first question.
Marion Creek is on Forest Service land.
So we'd have to do the same thing for Marion Creek?
We had the same problem with the dam a couple of years ago. So.
And actually, Marion Creek goes all the way into the wilderness, so yeah.
Okay, that'll add a lot to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So is that what we want to proceed with, is a permanent structure there?
Or a really, really good temporary, removable, mobile structure. Let's not call it temporary. Let's call it a cleverly engineered, something good. A concrete apron is probably
that's the best.
A permanent emplacement, but the weir itself doesn't necessarily have to be in place as long as there's a place to put it.
Right.
It would basically be June through October.
And so your picket frames, are they steel or aluminum?
Both. On Marion, it's all aluminum. On Horn, it was a mixture of steel and aluminum. Found materials, best available materials available at the time.
Well, all I was going to say is that there may be other frames floating around.
I'm sure there are. I just need to make sure that they have the right picket spacing. We found several other frames.
Really easy to make.
They have much larger picket spacing, and that would be worse than the
because anchoring it in with all the water holds back and debris, and then somehow anchoring it into the bottom that it doesn't, road away from the bottom where fish can get underneath.
Greg, I'm not convinced fish were getting underneath. I know we both thought that was the case, but we had, on the Horn Creek weir, we had fish going through, they were literally going through, and we had sandbags along the bottom edge. The bottom edge of each of the pickets never came off the benthos.
Yeah, I've just seen entire flows in years past where it's eroded out underneath them.
Uh-huh.
And if we're going to make something that's going to last 10 or 15 years, just that footing has to be to where we know that they're not going to.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do we move forward on that?
Well, if we want to do the permanent one, that's going to take a lot more work. We've got to get the right permits in place, get kind of a contract in place if we want to pour some kind of concrete footing down there. It's just making some new weirs. That's easy enough to do.
I think that
you just go to a local fab shop. Well, commission them.
They punch the holes out real quick.
Yeah, it wouldn't take much at all. I don't know. It's something that we probably want to do for many years out, for the foreseeable future, right?
Right.
So I'm assuming with the full flows for this next year, it'd be a perfect opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
You'll not get approval from the Forest Service within the next year.
Yeah, that's kind of the headache.
Think with Darren Neff and our new natural resources person up in Detroit, it might be easier than we used to have. I'm not saying that for sure, but it seems to be fairly common sense.
Well, that's why I only said just 1 year instead of 5 years. You might want to talk to him if you see him occasionally.
I'll call him after the meeting and start the conversation. I think when we talked to him before and we said it was more of a seasonal type weir than a year-round, it would be easier to get approval. I mean, obviously the footings would probably want to be permanent, but as far as a weir and restricting fish movement, temporary is obviously better than a permanent.
So, Greg, you're going to talk with Darren and scope out?
Yeah, I'll call him or email him after the meeting today.
Yeah, maybe let's figure out how possible that seems. If it seems like a total headache and it's going to take 5 years, maybe let's just proceed with at least getting some appropriately sized weirs built in place that we can use for the next 1 or 2 years.
Right.
If it's not that big of a deal, then maybe we can proceed with some kind of contract. That's something that I would be happy to try to find funding for if we can do it. And I don't know what the best way to do that. We might be able to pass it along to Marion Forks via an amendment to a task order. Get that funding and then have ODFW pursue the contract.
Wow. That's nice, whatever that is.
Yeah.
That's nice. I like that.
Somebody playing elevator music in the background?
Turn that up.
It's like we got put on hold. All right, does that seem like a good path forward?
The Forest Service calling in.
Yeah, that sounds great. I want to stay on top of that.
Yeah, I'd like to see that get done. Do you get everything you need for that one, Carrie?
I think so.
Okay, great. Anything else, Greg?
Yeah, just I got off the flow meeting. They're going to be looking at what intake elevations and what the pumps and stuff at Minto are going to need and want as they forecast the flows coming up here in the near future. They've modeled all kinds of stuff from being just perfect down to going below the RO to just passing inflows. So this week we're going to try to get exactly what the elevation intakes and what the pump at Minto will be able to handle in case they drop flows down below where the pumps were.
Okay, thanks. All right, Brett, South San Diego and Foster, what do you got?
Everything at South San Diego is going pretty smoothly. We, like everybody else, same thing. We have warmer water temperatures than we're used to seeing, so it's causing a few fish health issues, but nothing that we're having to treat for or anything at this point. We're just kind of having to change our fish culture practices a little bit, but we're getting through it, and we've gotten our eggs. We're done picking eggs this week. Just finished up. We've got all the eggs transferred to where they need to go, and but with the warmer water temperatures, it's kind of delaying our thermal marking on our fall release fish, the eggs that we have. So we're going to have to. We've been in contact with individuals in the lab, and we're going to have to delay that until after hatching now because we just don't have enough temperature break with the warmer reservoir water compared to our well. But other than that. Business as usual here, and then at Foster, we're done with collecting spring chinook. Haven't seen any spring chinook in a couple weeks. We're getting a few summer steelhead coming in. I won't talk about it too much because it's an agenda item, but we did have some OSHA issues, so basically right now we can't operate any of the crowders, so we're not going to be operating the trap for a few weeks. We're just going to let the fish come in and hold in the pre-sort pool until they get the safety issues taken care of on the pre-sort pool crowder.
Who said you couldn't operate the crowders? Was that Oregon or Core?
Oregon.
Okay.
We can operate them, but then we're just going to get fined daily.
Okay. Did you get your citation?
Not yet.
Okay.
It'll be coming into headquarters, to the director's offices. My understanding.
Good.
After October 31st?
All right. Thanks, Brett.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Would you like to give your update here at McKenzie?
Okay. Well, we closed our trap on the 8th of October. Ended up with 6,163 fish.
Wow.
Which is the fifth largest run here at McKenzie. So that's kind of cool. 98% of those were marked. And see here, we had our, we placed 406 carcasses out so far, kind of waiting for see if the spawning surveys are done. And Cam, are those spawning surveys done?
Yes, we decided yesterday they're done.
Okay, I figured it was real close. So, okay, so we got another 700-800 carcasses we'll put out in the upper river. The carcasses we placed so far have been in a couple side tributaries, Quartz Creek and Gate Creek, where surveys are normally not done, but then Jeff Ziller did a survey on Gate Creek after we put all those carcasses out there. And anyway, it was a challenge for him. For pretty smelly too, I think. But anyway.
Welcome to my world.
Let's see here. We have shocked two of the three groups of eggs we have. Our shock losses have been pretty normal, a little high on one, 7.5, but 4% on the other, so doing real well there. We've had real low BKD, 2%, so that's great. We've been kind of maintaining that 2% or lower for about the last 3-4 years. Shipped 576,000 eggs up to Nat Creek today. Otolith marketing started Monday. So our water temps have been, I would say, just about near normal lately. But certainly through September, first week or so of October, it was a degree or so higher. So it has accelerated our egg development a bit. We'll probably see some, maybe, depending on what happens in the next couple of months, maybe some fish being ponded in that Christmas time period, which has been a while since we've done that. Let's see here. Juveniles are doing pretty good. Like Greg and Brett just said, theirs are a little larger. Ours are too. You just got to maintain that fish health, and they grow. So we're all up against that this year. Fish health has been pretty good. You know, we got a little frunculosis showing up right now, and that's pretty typical with these adults above us here, and out there all shedding out their bodies out there. The stuff's flowing downstream to us, but we'll treat appropriately if we need to. I've got Sarah was just checking them yesterday, so we'll find out. Let's see here. We've got some USGS fish here, some of those surrogate juvenile Chinook, and they've been using those for some stuff of a cougar passage stuff, I believe. And we only have about maybe 200 of those left for them, and I think they're supposed to finish that up sometime in the next couple weeks. We're kind of finalizing our crew here. We've got our seasonal position back in place, so we'll be a full crew here shortly. We've had 15 tours over the last 6 weeks, so yeah, lots of tours. We're starting to slow down now with that. And you guys mentioned a little bit about Lieberg Dam and getting fish, hatchery fish out of there. Mike had three really nice-looking Chinook that came into the bypass like on Monday. I mean, they're nice-looking fish. I was surprised. Two females and a male. And so those are some of those fish that go up the ladder, kind of go around and turn right back down into that top of the canal. So still some fish in there a little bit. And I think we really need to look into possibly trapping the other side, too. I mean, it's a little bit confined space there, but Mike and I have talked about it a bit, and he feels that we can put a tube up there. We can at least pull the fish out of there and put them back right to the river. They come back again. We do it again and again and again. But I'm not sure about killing them on site right there or not. I'm not sure how that would work. It's pretty confined space. But anyway, just a thought. There's a lot of fish are pulled out of that left bank this year. Like Cam was saying, over 200. So that's a great deal. And that's about it for us.
Cool. Thank you, Kurt.
Follow up a little bit on the Gates Creek surveys that the district did. They only found three reds, and they were pleased to find those three reds. Mm-hmm. But we're not planning on adding those kind of reaches to our standard surveys because for three reds, we'd survey an additional 15 kilometers of stream. And I think while we know that we're getting a bias low total count of reds constructed, if we added substantial river miles of survey, then the red densities that we use to track year-to-year abundance and distribution would go down because we've added some very, very low production, but long stretches of stream. So I'm still struggling with that. I know they found reds. We've argued that what we're doing is a census because we're covering all of the known spawning habitat, but as time goes on, we discover there are these short stretches of streams, like on Cogswell Creek, the bypass return to river, Gates Creek now, it's some spawning that happens there. And it's not accounted for unless a survey happens. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of uncertainty. I don't quite know exactly what to do about it. It just happened last week, and I'm still thinking about it.
Interesting. What do you think about trapping on that other side?
I've never been down in there, but Mike Hoganson believes it can be done fairly straightforward with existing staff. Mm-hmm. The person we buy is a buy. We hire as a temp that runs the facility on the left bank ladder. Mm-hmm. He would just have to drop in there and deal with whatever fissure in the right bank. Mm-hmm. It could be done. Obviously, yeah. It's engineering. It can be done, but can we do it with EWEB and the core and whose money, who pays for it, all that?
Well, that wasn't that the big problem years back is that that's an EWEB ladder, right?
Right. Well, the big problem years past came from an observation by NOAA that the trap was being operated at a time when very large numbers of wild fish were passing through. So it was effective at removing hatchery fish, but was probably not fish-friendly for all the wild fish we were just passing through. I would not off-the-cuff support earlier trapping. I think right. Sticking to trapping with the rules we put in place this year where the hatchery fish outnumber wild fish or clip fish outnumber unclip fish, mm-hmm. That's where we should go into the future. I mean,
yeah.
I can't imagine a way that in those kind of retrofitted facilities, both bank ladders, where we would find a way of managing, handling large numbers of wild fish safely.
Right.
Okay. I just can't imagine it. Mm-hmm. There might be a way, but I'm convinced it's multiple millions of dollars worth of new construction to do that.
Right. So EWEB owns the ladder that's, is it the left bank?
Left and right bank, so yeah.
Oh. But
they own the dam.
But we can trap on one side, but there's...
Because the trap was built into that side, so the existing trap was engineered into the ladder.
Right.
On the dam back in the day. When was that dam built?
26?
30s, something like that.
Way back.
Yeah, way back.
Oh, okay. Maybe I missed it.
But there's not, the other ladder was added after the fact, way back. I don't know the history of this very well. Do you?
It's
2003.
Okay. Mm-hmm. There. And it's just a ladder.
Okay. But there's not like a property issue that we have, like that for some reason we can't do the same operation on that side.
I don't see one, but I don't know for a fact.
It was designed with modern scientific protection of wild fish, so therefore everybody swims through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not designed.
On that right bank site, yeah. Also, there's right now on the left bank, we can put them in a truck. On that right bank, we would really have a tough time doing that because you've got to walk them away to get them to where you can put them in a truck.
Mm. You need the loosh.
Just not a space.
Next to it like a can on the left bank.
The loosh. There's the loosh. We need to find a use for it. We could shoot them to the hatchery.
So, look.
I've always wondered about eggs in the whoosh.
Hold on. The whole fact that we would be only doing this with late arriving hatchery fish, and in normal years, far, far more fish enter the McKenzie facility than are actually needed for broodstock or outplanting. Mm-hmm. I think it's reasonable to just euthanize those fish in place and not worry about having to transport them back to the hatchery. We did that a bit this year just because there was some weird numbers of fish coming back and it looked like we could maybe get a few females from the left bank ladder to the hatchery, and that would help out, possibly.
Right.
But, I mean, he got 6,000 fish. 6,100, what did he say? Yeah, it's like...
Yeah.
I don't think he
a lot of fish. And one thing I'll mention, this year, being an odd year, and I've got to see how this plays out for a couple more years, normally we get quite a push in September, and we did this year, but it was much less. It was at least half of what normally comes in September. So I think I mentioned this last meeting that, the lower holes below us here had fish in them, and they did come in here, but they didn't have the numbers normally, and might be attributed to that mortality late down there in the lower river or something, I'm not sure, Portland area and that Oregon City area. But, normally we get much more than what we got this September.
Well, this is Lance. The other thing to consider is we're kind of going into... the future is unknown with the severe production cuts.
Oh, sure.
So, we don't want to get too excited about infrastructure stuff on Lieberg Dam and the costs associated with that, since we took the production reductions and put those in place. So, we should at least give it some years to see how that shakes out.
Yeah. All right. Anything else from McKenzie?
No, I think that's all we got.
All right. Thanks, Kurt. All right, Chad and Doug.
Cougar update. We're scheduled to shut down Cougar November 4th. Last fish we saw, I think, was on the 28th of September, so it's been pretty quiet up there. Season total, we ended up with a total of 284 fish back to the facility. Of those 284, 243 were unmarked. And let's see what else here. So,
what's 243 unmarked?
243, yeah. And so with the double Floyd tagging and all that we started basically at the beginning of the season, ended up Floyd tagging 242 fish. There was a trap north there, so 242, and then we recaptured a total of 139 of those 242, so around 57% recapture rate there.
So 57% recapture.
Yeah.
Just trying to think if there's some tricky algebra to see how that matches with the 80-20 rule we were finding in the last couple of years. 80% of the fish coming back before September 1st belonged above Cougar. 80% of the fish coming back after September 1st belonged below Cougar. I think I'm missing some unknowns here. I don't know. We need to do that. We need to figure out. And we'll get the genetics data, too.
Yeah, I know.
Let's work the numbers,
I'd
too,
agree.
Just to get a feel for did the early recycle, whatever we want to call it, imposition of early recycling alter the total number of cougar-bound fish going above Cougar.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we've been getting at is, what are the fish that returned once that do assign to up above Cougar that did not get recaptured?
Right.
Right.
And then we didn't find elsewhere.
Yeah.
I found a double Floyd tagged Chinook, spawned out Chinook in Horse Creek 2 weeks ago.
Hogeson, they found one in Liebert Bypass, too, a dead one.
In the Liebert Bypass?
Liebert Bypass, a double Floyd tag fish from Cougar. So.
Okay. Yeah, they spread out.
And what I thought was really fascinating this year, remember when we had the outage at Cougar this year? We couldn't operate the trap for all those weeks or whatever. As soon as we opened the trap back up, we got a big slug of fish. Those were our low sequence Floyd tags that we put into those fish. Those fish showed up all the way, were lingering out in the river until the end of the run.
Yeah,
for months.
Pretty
they hung out somewhere.
Hmm.
Somewhere for months and came back in the season.
That's cool.
And we've got some fish back, you know, within a few days, and others, like Doug was saying, came
crazy.
Right at the end. So, I mean, it was
like, this is the last fish. I'm like, well, here's number 30.
That would be
true. Where was it been?
Back.
Can you talk?
Yeah. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, okay. We did not find any single Floyd tagged fish, which means we did not find any examples of a tag loss, did you?
We had a couple that had shed a tag.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's low percentage tag loss.
Seemed like it, yeah. The double Floyd tag, that was a good idea. Really, and the key is the way you do it is a big deal. And you can't just be, you need to get into the interior musculature and really twist and know, watch what you're doing.
Get into the interstitial bones
from the
dorsal fin. If you can get that anchor back in the air, man, that thing doesn't go anywhere.
And you know how production work is. If you have a zillion fish and you're cranking through, the slop starts to happen, right? Yeah.
I thought that was Floyd Tag 101.
Yeah.
I think you got a picture, I think, from those guys.
I never get training like that. I get training like a new manager in orientation.
Yeah, from a workload standpoint, though, I mean, it was definitely quite a bit more work this year to do the double Floyd Tag from the beginning of the season. Because, I mean, we definitely had... It was two destinations per day.
We had
fish going to Forest Glen and then fish up above the Hard Creek or Hard Rock. So it was a lot more time spent than. I mean, luckily, Fall Creek.
That was really
earlier, and so we were able to pull it off. But yeah, I mean,
it would have been impossible, pretty much, to do it in a day. Yeah, to empty the trap in a day if Fall Creek was.
If you were doing Fall Creek and Cougar at the same time, you
can't.
And the limitation would be the truck and personnel? Or
just time.
Yeah, time. The time of the amount of hours in the day.
Different crew
and travel time on top of it from Fall Creek over. So, yeah, we we would have to adapt with all this.
So you just have one truck driver, so you take one trip down below and come back and
yep.
take another trip above, or vice versa, whatever.
Yeah, a couple post-war tanks.
And,
yeah,
it does.
For sure.
And we had tours, so we're trying to work and to give tours, too. That was really fascinating.
Any feel for if this 100% recycling management action is going to be continued in the future? Or?
I mean, is it dependent on the pedigree results? Or?
I'm hoping another year will help.
Any sense for...
I know that everybody is waiting to see what the pedigree results are. Propose it, especially if we can demonstrate... And again, it's algebra here, and I don't know whether we have all the unknowns, but did we decrease the number of fish that would have gone above cougar?
Right.
Because we started recycling fish early. If we did do that, did those fish survive to produce offspring down below cougar, or did they perish? I'm concerned about the handling of fish mm-hmm. mortality, or either delayed mortality or some kind of maybe loss of eggs or whatever late in the season that reduces fitness mm-hmm. because of the all of the transport. And I just don't quite know how to get a handle on all of it. But if there are negative outcomes from the recycling and plus additional staff needs and equipment needs, you know, then that's an argument that goes against doing the downstream transport that early. Mm-hmm. So somebody, the operators, you guys, need to put together a description of that, and we'll float it out to this group.
Yep.
Whoever else, I guess it'd be more of a... Definitely should go to the district, because it's Jeff Ziller that's got the strongest feelings about the early...
Right.
Early outplanting, or early recycling.
Mm-hmm.
Then another kind of question came up partway through the season... what to do with the hatchery fish that came back to the facility. I mean, the quota for up above the dam was met, and then so we still had a flux of hatchery fish coming back into the facility. And
we,
you know, what do we kill them later on, or do we just return to the river?
I thought that they had been transported up. But last year they were transported upstream because we were basically certain we weren't going to reach.
Yeah, we needed them.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden this year we had this record fifth largest run down there. Mackenzie.
So, what are we talking about? How many hatchery? How many clipped fish?
You had 280.
So you had 41 unclipped fish came back.
Yeah, 40.
Their clipped fish came back.
43 clipped fish. Yeah, came back. So I mean, we're not getting, you know, not a huge number of fish, but.
Yeah.
Let's see. Of those that got returned to the tail race, 24 of them we sent back to the tail race, and that was after kind of. Midway through the season after the 600 fish had been outplanted mm-hmm. above cougar.
Yeah. And the others prior to that had also
we had hauled them,
because
you know, we knew we weren't going to make that 600 fish quota. So.
Well, from my perspective, control of PHAS below cougar is key, and if they're in your hands, then something has to happen that reduces PHAS in the majority of the system, so do not release them back into the tail race.
So kill them?
Transport it upstream or kill them. The transport upstream is a decision to be made with some discussion. What do you think? We're reasonably sure that in the next couple of years we're not going to get our quota of naturally produced fish above cougar, and we will be supplemented with some hatchery fish. So it could be pretty straightforward. So in the near term, next couple of years probably, just as a rule, outplant those fish and subtract them from the portion that would be transported from the hatchery.
Can we come up with a stepwise way of doing that?
Yep.
A number, target number, like that tells us how to proceed?
Yep.
That should be a real cookbook thing.
Yeah, cookbook.
Should be pretty easy, I think. Just for however many hatchery fish you guys end up outplanting up above there, as long as that's communicated to Kurt and the guys at McKenzie, they can just subtract that many fish and how many they want.
That many males, that many females
a day.
And we could probably make that decision, make that algorithm, whatever, after we get most of the fish over Willamette Falls. And the count of unclipped fish over Willamette Falls will be the threshold that'll tell us, maybe we're going to be getting a couple of hundred more fish at cougar, or maybe not.
So we probably don't want to wait to do the outplants from McKenzie Hatchery until really late in the season. So there may be some hatchery fish that come back to Cougar after the 600 have been outplanted. And of those, maybe we do euthanize those.
But don't put it back in the
Or I mean, what's the difference between 600 or 620 fish? Minimal effects. So I guess I could go either way on that one. But
okay, so path forward would be track Willamette Falls counts, make a prediction on what that means to Cougar returns, mm-hmm. and come up with a protocol for handling clipped fish at Cougar based on what we know then. And, you know, pedigree results and everything else you feed it to.
Yeah.
Does that sound fair? Folks on the phone?
Yeah, you guys, this year, so we did half of those fish, 200 females and 100 males, in July. And then the other half went out the 26th of August. So, you know, I don't know if that's something we want to continue to do with that early portion, and then we could wait longer, you know, to see what happens with those guys up the trap at Cougar. You know, maybe mid-September, I mean, you're getting, you know, peak spawning at that time, so it's a little rougher on the fish, I think, but...
There's a plus side to that, because if you outplant fish that are that close to spawning, they will spawn. They must spawn. Right. So... otherwise, they do weird things. Going back to your Liebert bypass, those two females were dead ripe. They had not spawned by last week.
Yeah.
Okay, there aren't any other ripe females that we've seen anywhere else in the McKenzie. So they're hanging on to their eggs because I think, fundamentally, they're trapped where they can't spawn.
Yeah,
and then they wash downstream, get into Hogenson's bypass thing there, and he handles them. If you put fish up there early that aren't ripe, they'll wander and they'll look for an outlet because they weren't born there. They'll fall back into the reservoir. Do you ever see them fall over the dam? I guess you wouldn't see that, would you?
What's that?
Do you ever see any adult fish coming downstream over Cougar? How would
we
you
see
know
them
that?
In the reservoir?
We see carcasses. We have carcasses this year in the forebay.
Okay.
Yeah. There's definitely some drop back. But.
Yeah.
Well, later's better if you really, really just want to get them to spawn.
It would probably be in pieces if they came back, fell through the dam and Cougar,
right.
to be honest.
Yeah.
Or I don't know about the RO, but yeah.
So what do you think about still doing the July outplanting group?
Excluded.
Still do that, but then wait until like
I don't think
September.
We need to do it in July. Why did we do it in July now, this time? Was it holding densities or something, Kurt?
You know, that the warm water and the possibility of the canal having troubles.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. So we didn't know whether we were going to lose the water at the hatchery, so to sort of preempt a catastrophe. This was a weird year. It really shouldn't have happened this year necessarily direct what will happen into the future.
Yeah.
So.
It's not blackberry. It's supposed to get worse.
I'm getting ready to do a road trip here in a couple weeks with 1,000 CFS. It's like tentacle.
You'll be walking.
I have a big barge. I don't want a bit of pop.
So if in normal years, if we did wait until later in August or September to outplant from McKenzie Hatchery, that would actually bode well for dealing with hatchery fish that come back to Cougar.
Mm-hmm.
Be a little bit easier to subtract it from the...
Mm-hmm. So the place that... We've done most of the decisions about outplanting is the meeting where we work through the disposition charts. Were you part of that this past year with Bernadette?
Yeah, in the spring sometime.
Yeah, it was in the spring.
Yep.
That's when we'll make the decision. I mean, that's what that meeting is for, is to figure out basin-wide how are we going to do outplanting. Mm-hmm. In a normal year, the plan would have gone forward as laid out. And this was not a normal year, but usually it is.
Yeah.
So...
Cool.
So I'm going to note that. Outplanting decisions for the outplant disposition table meeting.
Yeah. Annual disposition meeting. Okay. Sounds good. Anything else on Cougar?
I don't think so.
Cool. Fall Creek is well wrapped up at this point.
Yeah, Fall Creek ended. We closed the facility on the 29th of September. Grand totals there, 259 non-marked Chinook, 30 ad clipped. Earliest fish showed up ever this year, Chinook, April 13th. Breakdown, males non-marked, 111, females non-marked, 125. We had four lamprey collected. We collected four lamprey this year. They rejected the lamprey ramp and went for the fike traps because I'm guessing they're just following the perimeter of the facility.
Where are those fike traps?
What's that?
Where are the fike traps?
They're located along the perimeter of the wing walls.
It's in the Stilling Basin.
In the Stilling Basin. So as you come up north wing wall, we had one or two there, and then two up on the wing wall, the southern wing wall of the fish ladder. But you could just tell that the lamprey were following contours, looking for a way around. That's how they got into those.
Yeah.
And but we're hoping with the seasoning of the lamprey ladder and the predator controls we have on there that they might start using that. You never know. They're pretty wild animals, cool animals. And we took genetics. We're going to send off to the Grand Ronde tribe. No summer steelhead at Fall Creek this year collected. Winter steelhead, 19.
19?
Yep. We are taking genetics. I wanted to bring this up. We are officially starting construction of the new Fall Creek Fish Facility with the water supply contract moving forward. That's happening right now. Construction schedule for the new facility, building new facility at Cougar, will be 1 November 2016 through 28 February 2017, and then also 1 November 2017.
Hold on, sorry. November 1, 2016 through
28 February 2017. That's the language in the contract. It's probably gonna, you know, if we get things done earlier, you know how that goes.
And what's the first step in construction, that first window? What are they doing?
First step of the window is going to be, I think, lower ladder and excavation stuff, but I'm just pulling that out of my head, backside of my brain. I have that information if you guys want that. It's in the contract. Then the same thing the following year for the window, 1 November 2017 through 28 February 2018. So those are the, and then it should be done by 28 February 2018. Should be done and ready to accept fish whenever they arrive. And we should be opening it up. We usually open it up mid-March.
Cool.
We'll see how that works.
Does that affect any juvenile trapping going on at Fall Creek?
Shouldn't. We haven't really worked out how the evaluator, juvenile downstream evaluator, is going to work with the new facility. But we will have the screw traps in place, but that's all flow dependent through the dam. It doesn't really spin very good below 200 CFS, and the facility water supply is 200 CFS. So kind of screw trap goes offline if it's a dry year pretty early down there. But if we are able to capture fish coming through the evaluator, which do sample the horn waters, then we'll have that in place.
Do you know if the pit tag detection capabilities are going to be in place as constructed on the new Fall Creek facility?
Eventually, but we're going to be handling every fish, so we will scan everything.
Right.
Yeah, everything, every adult.
It just came up at the other facilities where there was provisions made to install pit tag detection, but it never was put in.
The structure will be there, so someday, if we do want to put it in, but we will still have coverage because we're scanning everything.
Yeah.
Fenton mentioned something about that last week, that he was trying to get that stuff put in the facilities.
You know, that it'll be the more like the sheet plate style, insulated, and structure, and infrastructure we built so that we don't have too bad of interference. But we have good insulation these days, designs on those antennas. So we should be good there. I meant to bring the Patagus info about the one pit tag fish from Fall Creek this year. I have that. I'll give it to you later if you want it.
One pit tag fish
from Willamette Falls D-Tech I think it was a paired release fish. It was paired release fish.
Most likely.
And I have, I thought I brought it, you guys. I'm sorry. I'll get that to you if you want it.
Yes, I do. Paul Olmstead.
It's on there, too. It's on the Patagus.
You can look it up. Okay, good.
Good. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
What was the story there? Synopsis?
It was one of Friesen's fish.
So one of the paired, fish released in Lookout popped up to Fall Creek on return as an adult and got detected by these guys.
Okay. Yeah.
Scanning.
Okay. Cool.
Pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. So I think that's it. The problem with that is that Tom has very little interest and no need to have detailed information about those fish. He knows when they come up over Willamette Falls, and he gets a subsample of those fish as they return and get interrogated at the facilities. And that's fine for the paired release stuff. But we've also got large numbers of naturally produced juveniles that are getting pit tagged. And those fish, if they come back to a facility, we want them sampled extremely carefully. We want scales if they're dead. We want otoliths. There's so few coming back for the effort going forward getting tags in those fish that we really, really need to maximize recovery of pit tagged wild fish that come back to the facilities. And we thought that if there's early detection in the facility as the fish enters, there'll be time or some way that a system can be set up so we can say, hey, we got a pit tag fish, and that pit tag fish is one we need to find because we need to get a scale sample, a careful length, sex, all of the detailed information that we might want, and conceivably might want to sacrifice it or use it in broodstock or something like that so that we can get the otoliths out of it.
Yeah, please let us know what to do because we can do all that. Just please let what the group agrees upon. Yeah, we can do that.
But the trouble is, so many hatchery fish go in with pit tags.
Yeah.
And we don't want you to do that with hatchery fish because
no way
we got the information we needed from those. It's only going to be for the projects that are releasing juvenile wild fish that with a pit tag in them that we really want to try to make.
We need to hold it and look the fish up is what we need to do.
Something like
that.
It
can't be processed that day. That's what we have to do for now.
Right.
Come back to it, look that number up. That's what we got to do.
Yeah, so what you kind of need is some kind of readout of all the fish that had a pit tag
in
the facility during the day, and you could scan the list for the tags
you submit
you're
it to Patagus. You submit the tag detections to Patagus, and our guys would be really good at it. I'm assuming most entities that are tagging juvenile fish are doing a good job of uploading it to Patagus. So, in relatively speaking, real terms time, you can find out what that fish is. But. Mm-hmm. This conversation came up with Chris Caudill a couple years ago because he was very interested in that too because of the interest in the otolith analyses his guy, Sam? I forget his name.
Yeah, Sam Brett.
Yeah.
The microchemistry of the otoliths,
I don't think we ever did as great a job as we could have. We gave him a few samples from fish, but it wasn't like we know for a fact that 100% of the pit-tagged fish that came back to facilities were checked to see whether that needed to be a intensely sampled fish that would go to various researchers. So, something to kind of figure out how to do.
Mm-hmm. So does that work this year?
Show up at Cougar this year, didn't we?
Yeah.
Pit-tagged fish?
So do we hold them? Does that work for now? Hold them and look them up and then call the team up or something? What do we do this year if we don't figure this out? This coming year.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good. We'll talk about it, but okay. that sounds reasonable to me. If you recover a pit tag fish, find out what the provenance of that fish was, and ask. It could be me, or by looking at Patagus, you'll know who the researcher was, and you can simply call them email them, and it'll be it'll be 10 fish a year, basin wide.
Yeah.
So it's not a huge effort, but I think it's kind of a bit like due diligence. Once you put a tag in a fish, that's an implicit agreement that you will do everything you need to recover information from those tags, whatever information the researcher needs to get the research done. And in Tom's case, it's minimal. It's like, you got this fish, good job. Do whatever else you do with that fish. But in Luke Whitman's case, he might have tagged that fish in Horse Creek as a sub-yearling 2 years earlier, and he really wants to know that it showed up at Fall Creek or Detroit. He needs to know that.
Yeah, we got one of Luke's fish. It was a hatchery fish, but it was a bad clip. And
I think it got a
beach staining in the lower river.
It was fascinating, too, because it brought up the whole thing of, hey, while we're thinking of that, who can produce the guide for Miss Marks, ad fence. I really want the guide out there for what do I do with this animal? I know it's a Miss Mark, but it has OSP. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah, we need some guidance, please. How do we get in trouble?
A quick little flip book.
Seriously, we'll measure it. We'll measure it relative to other metrics.
And then Jeff made one years ago.
He did. Way. Jeff made one on the back of a, yeah.
Greg, are you still on the phone? Grand member?
Yeah, I'm here.
You took a bunch of photographs of clips for fish that were sampled for otolith marks years ago.
Yeah.
And you have them graded as to misclip, regen, good fin, things like that?
It's somewhere. State police tell me it's a healed adipose. That is their definition.
Okay.
That's how we've kind of gone with it. That's even it. If it had a nub, yeah. I'm sure if you kept that fish, you'd probably get a ticket.
So yeah, we just, what would Marshall do is our question.
I'm assuming you ask every state police, and they probably have a different...
Well, no. You ask Martin and ask Marshall, and you get two different answers.
Well, not to get too far off, but this is going to become, in your world, much more difficult in the next couple years. We had what Kurt described as pretty poor quality adipose clipping for the 2014 brood.
Oh, really?
So the 2000. Kurt, if I get this wrong, the tagging, the fin clipping that occurred in 2015 on the 2014 brood was not up to our normal standards. And
yeah, that's correct. Yeah, we had. Yeah, that's correct. For a few ponds, for sure.
And those fish then will be returning as fours and fives in 2016 and 17. No, they're four. Yeah. Four-year-olds from 2014, 2018 and 19. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Those 2 years, you're going to get an awful lot of fish that are questionable clips.
Hmm.
Just very basic arithmetic, if it ended up being like a 10% mismark rate, then that is going to 20% tagging rate, then it's going to translate into several hundred more misclipped adults coming back as fours and fives, mostly fours, starting in 2018.
Hey, Kurt.
Yeah.
Hey, on a side note, we got, probably at least a dozen or so fish that had those Floyd tags, I think, that came into your facility, the orange
right.
tags,
yeah,
and
G.I.
the G.I. Joe tags. And,
yeah.
Are you interested in any of that information? Or?
Not really.
Okay.
We're just when we put them over at Greenwood, we're just wondering if they're going to come back into the trap, which we did have a fair number come back into the trap.
Okay.
So that was basically all it was. Okay. I mean, you guys have a dozen show up there or something?
Something like that. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. We made note of it on all the data sheets.
It looks like you were getting rid of old tags.
Yeah, we were. I think someone said reward on them from G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
It was really cool seeing two blue Floyd tags and then another tag. It was like Christmas trees swimming around.
Yeah, right.
All right. Call that good. All right. Lammet and Dexter. Dan Peck, are you on the phone?
This guy's dedicated on these elk hunting. But he said it was cell phone contact us. Talking to him yesterday. He should have logged in. He's not dedicated. Anyway, okay, here's the deal. That they had lots of fish. I mean, they got plenty of adults collected. Problem they're running into is that their shock loss is real high. I think last week it was 17 and 30%+ on two lots. I don't have the data from this week, but it wasn't a BKD loss. Mm-hmm. We've had some, but it's just really poor quality eggs.
Okay.
And so... That was the first week of egg takes too. So I don't know how it's going this week. Nobody has given me any information. I should know Friday what happened this week. But they hopefully it's improved. But that's a problem. And then down at Dexter, they started dying about 2 weeks ago at a high rate, to the tune of in the asphalt ponds like 3,000 of them, up to 5,000 fish a day. They started treating immediately with TM top dressed feeds we make ourselves because BioOregon was backlogged getting medicated feed. In fact, the finest thing I've seen done by BioOregon is it was supposed to be delivered last Friday, and they forgot to put it on the truck.
Wow.
Sorry.
That makes my tree manager happy.
But they had brought the loss down by, I think it was last weekend, down to about 600 fish from up to 5,000 on those big ponds. So they've actually got it under control, and I haven't talked to Tim since.
We did. Temperatures are starting to get into low 60s, and we're praying we can get into the 50s.
Yeah, it was 63 degrees 2 weeks ago.
Now we're 61, and Tim's noticing differences in the amounts of morts. He's thinking about early releasing still.
Oh, really?
A little bit.
Yeah,
just to speak for Dan and him.
You really pulled the losses down, though.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Top-dressed feed is not as good as feed that's incorporated. They just don't take the medication as well. You lose a lot of it.
Yeah.
And if we'd been on real medicated feed, losses probably would have been lower.
Yeah, and can I add one thing that from back in the flow calls back in July, I remember bringing this up about if we can proactively get that feed in there early, because evidently we're somewhat hobbled on feeding them until after huge losses happening.
That's correct.
So if we could somehow free that up, we could really reduce losses because, you know, Dan and Tim, they're experts. They know what's happening.
Well, they started making their own feed before they got permission to do it.
Yeah, Tim's truck, we stopped in there and said hi the other day, and the whole taxi was full of
vegetable oil. Yeah, no, seriously.
Some mixer down there. Yeah. I think he's mixing 200 or 300 pounds a day.
Yeah, well, Dan was predicting high losses on Dexter pond fish 6 or 8 months ago.
Yes, he was, yeah. And it happens every year that we have these temperatures, and then concurrent years, which we might see this year, we should definitely get the trigger in place early for this.
We're not prophylactically treating.
That's what you need to be doing.
That's the word.
Treating these guys with antibiotics just on a regular basis. Just like
right. We don't want to
tell them. They're just pumping that stuff in. But we're not
marbled salmon. Sorry.
But losses were not huge. I mean, that's 3,000 fish a day out of 1.2 million fish. So it's percentage-wise, it's bad, but could have been worse. I mean, we've experienced worse at other locations this year. And I think they were able to put the brakes on. And so this is Wednesday. He should have gotten his feed either Monday afternoon or Tuesday. And so by this Friday, we should be back down to the point where it's manageable. And the water temperature is going to keep dropping. It was cold at night this week. So if he gets down under 60, then it'll be doing better.
So, did he make root? I heard he was down like 500 pairs.
I think, well, it's these guys, all the other guys on the phone will tell me that when they say they've made brood, there's a question between making brood to collect that's eggs or making brood to take enough eggs to cover your losses.
Yeah.
He was taking adults up till I think 2 weeks ago, which means that he did not have a solid base. Pre-spawn mortality was, I can't remember what it was.
50 a day.
600 some fish, I think.
Yeah. He told me it was super high.
It was a bunch. This just was a bad year.
Yeah.
And I want to add some of that. We had to go out on the river and do unrelated work to fish work and water chemistry or geomorphology work. And what was that? What, July or something? We found dead fish that were beautiful shape downriver, immediately dead, between there and Fall Creek. I mean, beautiful fish, dead.
Just tipped over.
Just, they literally went, and they were trying to, I was in my kayak and they were trying to use me as cover, too. They're like, where are we going to hide? Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, but literally beautiful fish dead, lots of.
Yeah. We had no reds below the depth. We have no reds in Fall Creek. Little Fall Creek.
Wow.
Go ahead.
We put fish in there this year, right?
36.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't a huge number, but we had anticipated seeing some reds. Yeah. Little Fall Creek, 36, 14 females, 22 males. We assumed we would see some reds. We didn't.
It's interesting. So maybe that choice to take those fish and put them in Little Fall Creek.
Well, We had no choice. Is that what you said?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's no other better option.
They all died in below. Well, they died everywhere.
Yeah. There's no better option, but I was hopeful that that would at least be somewhat of an improvement. But it doesn't look like it was, at least for this year.
The elk plants for the North Fork, Middle Fork went pretty well this year. We were able to get out. I think we got our 1,200 fish. I'm not mistaken.
Yep, we did plus.
Yeah, I think we had
plus 1200. Maybe another load. Yeah, maybe.
Nice.
And of Hills Creek, got nearly 2,000. Yeah, our planning seemed to go reasonably well. Relatively speaking, a little mortality in the North Fork, Middle Fork, just like last year. Mm-hmm. Higher mortality above Hills Creek, just like last year. Mm-hmm. And I haven't reviewed what we're seeing in Fall Creek. I just know that we have a very small number of reds, so I'm assuming. But you had a small number of adults, too. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, we did.
I haven't done that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess the one thing we never talk about it, but there's a trout mitigation component for Liebert. Mm-hmm. With the bulk of those fish are started at Willamette, and they had a huge loss this summer. They were 500,000 fish short. But just like the Skamanias, we gathered fish from a number of different sites. And Liebert's like 9,000 fish below its production goal right now, and those would have come from, they would have been 300,000 short coming from Willamette. So everybody is full up back. We've recovered from that because we could move fish back and forth. Mm-hmm. We gathered them up all over the place, and so that end, even though there was huge losses to disease to them, at least we could mitigate with other area fish. Mm-hmm. And so,
all right. Anything else on labor?
Well, that's that, and I actually get the report from him. But anyway, yeah, he's up. That's doing well. He's still got another 20 summer steelhead in the trap if Brett wants them. 31 total this year. Really low return of summer steelhead delivery. So, you know, it's a little deal. But and other than that, everything is going fine. They their water temperatures cooled off, and they're all set. They're all split out for the usual factory for next year.
Cool.
All is well.
All right. Cam, do you have anything else for Bennett or Liebert?
No report on Bennett. I got the data. There was a. I meant to email, but I thought I'd just tell you today. Yesterday, I found there was some missing data in the Bennett Minto counts, and Bart sent me the updated material yesterday.
Mm. Okay.
I'll forward it to you. It was just some. What was it? It was some missing reports on outplants that occurred in September. That's all.
Okay.
Liebert's done, except for the Liebert bypass. You already brought that up. That was an interesting observation. Those are very ripe female Chinook salmon that looked in great shape, but they just didn't spawn. And I think it's still a positive thing for us to do because it is almost entirely hatchery fish getting into there, so getting them out of the system means that they won't be released to the lower river to contribute to high PHAS below Liebert. So it's great that they've fallen back out of the reaches above Liebert with sanctuary. It's better if we can, in addition, remove them from being in the spawning population below Liebert. So I want to continue doing it.
Yeah.
Did you say those fish were hatchery fish?
All hatchery fish, and two of the three were very ripe females, so full of eggs. Way past spawning, so.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah. Cool. We covered most of it, but anything else for outplanting spawning surveys that you wanted to share today? Any other
updates?
No,
what I didn't do is I didn't take the record of outplanting and compare it directly to the disposition plan that we built early in the year, but eyeballing it, we're pretty close. We came up low for the numbers of fish. We were running low for the numbers of fish above Detroit, but this says that we finally we did hit the 1,600 outplant plan, so that's okay. Oh, that's right. There were some late outplants from Minto that brought the total up, so that's good.
And that's the combination of
Brighton Bush and
Brighton Bush and North Sandia.
We put 171 fish above Minto, unclipped fish above Minto, and our surveys above Minto. We got two of them in again, just like last year. We saw 20 reds. So last year, 800 fish, saw 80 reds. This year, 200 fish, saw 20.
And we caught quite a bit of fallback this year, Cam. I don't know how it'll look from last year to this year, but it seemed like a lot more fell back this year. I don't know if it was river conditions or what.
How many unclipped fish do we end up getting above Detroit into the North San Diego?
476.
Cool. Great. Good deal.
572 above Foster. That's one half the average. But we'd anticipate that the majority of those fish would be 4-year-olds because the 5-year-old brood above Foster failed in 2010. The same reason we had very small numbers of 4-year-olds last year is we had small numbers of 5-year-olds this year.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. All right, moving on, a little update on the Cougar Pedigree funding. Spoke to Ian Chain just before our meeting this morning, and he confirmed that we're still on track to fund that. Right now it is sitting with our contracting office in the queue. And as most of you guys know, contracting has been moving painfully slow these days, but it's on track to
this
still
is for
get
which
done.
Samples?
14... I believe first.
Because we have this year's samples in hand now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're out in the truck.
In the truck.
Yeah.
So
hand them off to Cam today.
Yeah. Let me know if what did Kathleen do? Do you know what Kathleen did for her proposal? 14 and 15 or just 14?
I think it was both.
So let me know what to do.
Totally sure,
we've got the samples and they're
okay.
But you know the 2014 is approved.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know if 2015
I'm not
is.
Sure. I'm not sure if they coupled it together, if they split it out into the two different years. I can confirm on that, though. Do you want me just to let you know directly?
Yeah, let me know directly. I mean, the efficiencies of being able to deliver these to the geneticists all at one time and all of the data all in one place is great. Otherwise, confusing things happen.
Sure.
So, Andy, you say on track, but what does that mean, schedule-wise?
I don't know, Lance, exactly. Right now, we're under a continuing resolution, and we actually haven't had any of our funding dropped for labor codes, for MIPRs to transfer funding to other federal agencies, to anything right now. So that's... Everything that's in our contracting office is tied up until we actually get some permanent funding dropped, which is supposed to happen in the next couple of weeks. It's kind of unprecedented. It hasn't taken this long to make its way through headquarters in recent years. So I don't have a timeline for you. I'll keep you guys updated as soon as I find out, but it's kind of contingent on us getting funded first. Sorry.
Okay, sounds good, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I'll keep you guys updated as soon as I find out. All right, number 6 on the agenda, the Willamette Fish Passage Operations and Maintenance Meeting Transition. Tammy Mackey, are you on the phone by chance?
I am on the phone.
Would you like to speak to that?
Yeah, so this one will just be kind of a heads up, and then I'll have a better presentation for next month. But we are looking at reorganizing how we coordinate in the Willamette. So you've had the MOCs and the MFRs come out, but we also need to have a better O&M forum. So we are looking at creating basically just an O&M forum that is similar to what we have on the Columbia. It won't be identical, but I do have a draft agenda that I can post to the website so you could kind of see what those meetings might look like and then provide any feedback that you might have. And that's all I got for right now.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but this would be kind of a combination of HMT with flow management?
Yeah, so all the operations and maintenance that we need to do in the Willamette for fish.
Right, so it also includes some components of passage as it relates to O&M.
And not fish passage design, though we would want the fish passage team to be able to provide an update to the O&M team as to what they're working on and what changes to operations we could expect.
Right.
And the reason we are looking to kind of streamline this coordination process is we do have some memorandums of coordination that come out that are not 100% appropriate for just HMT to comment on, and they're not just going to impact flow. So having a unified body where everybody can meet at least once a month and talk through the issues will be helpful for documentation purposes and just for general coordination purposes and team building, because that would be good for both teams to talk to each other more regularly.
And did we have a time estimate for when we were looking at making that transition, Tammy?
So what we're looking at is it goes to Fish Forum next week, it goes to the steering team in November, and then I will bring it to HMT in more detail also in November. So I would suspect by January 1st we should be able to have a combined O&M forum.
Cool.
But if anyone does have any concerns or suggestions, I am open to hearing them. Certainly, I know there's some resistance to being like the Columbia, so it won't be exactly like the Columbia, but we do have a proven track record of having good coordination and documentation on the Columbia River as far as the FCRPS goes.
Great, thanks. And the draft agenda is posted to the website right now.
What are you rushing me for? Jeez.
I'm going to encourage people to take a look at it.
Draft agenda will soon be posted to the... Is that right?
This afternoon, it will be there for you to see kind of a general idea of how a combined meeting might go.
I was on the website yesterday, clicked on a link in the upper right-hand corner of the website, and it gave me an error message over and over again. What was I trying to do? I think I was trying to look at the website's version of the 2000 or the last month's HMT meeting meeting notes. There was something wrong, some broken link in there.
Okay, I will look at that.
Who's managing that
just
now?
Just as a heads up, come November, we will also be giving an update on our transition to a new website. Mm-hmm. Our new website will be hosted by StreamNet, and I'll be able to walk you through that layout. It's a lot more user-friendly than the one that we have right now. But I will fix that link for you, Cam.
StreamNet, ooh, good time.
That's fancy graphics.
Pretty pictures.
Yeah. Looks nice and works better.
Cool. Hey, we have a website and it works. Hey, it does work. It's awesome.
Cool. Thank you, Tammy. Any other comments on that?
I don't know what it means. I'm looking forward to the agenda and some more understanding on who's going to be involved, because these meetings are great because there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and hardly ever more than 8 people present at one time. When that meeting size goes up to 15 to 20 people, then it has to be facilitated carefully in order to be a productive meeting.
Right. So some of the first meetings that we'll have, I will be the facilitator for them. And since I'm known to be a little bit of a dictator, I'm sure it will go perfectly smoothly. But there may be more people there. That doesn't mean that they're going to be commenting on every item on the agenda.
That also kind of gets at something that I've brought up in the past, is for each agency or for a district within each agency, it would be very helpful to have a prime contact point and also the person who will be speaking for that agency at the meetings.
So we did that, right? I mean, I know Tom and I talked about it.
Two or three months ago, and that's when we decided we couldn't have one single point.
Yeah, so what? I don't know if anyone ever got back to me on that. So what was the resolution there?
I thought we did. John is the czar of hatchery operations and maintenance and is the link between absent hatchery managers in this group.
Great.
Which is fun. Mm-hmm. And I'm handling, with Tom, the research-oriented and monitoring-oriented aspects of the hatchery plan.
You didn't get to dump that all on Tom, huh?
Well, he wouldn't take it.
So who is the prime? Is it you? And then Tom?
Well, it depends on
alternate.
What the topic is. I'm the prime. Tom's the alternate. But if it's there's a broken thing at this facility, John is the
contact. Okay. And then for district bio stuff, Jeff and Elise?
Yeah.
Okay. Perfect. Good. Okay. Cool.
Jeff's got to be close, too. You might want to CC Kelly on anything too.
Besides that, Kelly calls back.
Yeah. Kelly calls
back. All right, great. Okay, let's move along here. The last two items, just kind of an update, keep everybody aware, and keep it on our plates here, is some of the safety issues at Foster, and then some of the same issues have also come up at Minto, and then some of the DEQ issues as well at Minto. So let's talk about Foster first. We know that it sounded like ODFW was going to get a citation and a fine for some
They told us we had a meeting, conference call here a week ago. But anyway, they're going to give us a citation. Or at least the guy from Eugene. Still has not gone up to his people, his boss in Salem. It's still a regional guy that's going to give us a citation with a 20% increase because we already reported these things and built workarounds. And then instead of giving us 30 days after we receive the citation, he wants to give us 7 days to vacate. All of which started us, our DOJ folks, our attorney, got this information about a week ago. And I gave him copies of the task orders and the co-op agreement to show what our relationship and who does what. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we're contesting a number of these things, and that beyond the fact they're not reasonable, they were incorrect citations. They were stuff we didn't violate.
Yeah,
we were in compliance. He just said we weren't in compliance. Some of these guys will do that. They'll just you get one inspector and everything is fine, and the next guy comes down and he's had a bad day, and you're going to go to put you in handcuffs and you're off in jail again. So anyway, but we are taking a very aggressive stance on this, and this is unusual. ODFW is ready to push back on the thing.
How much?
I don't know where it's going to end up.
How much? I mean, what's the
minimum
dollar amount?
It's ridiculous. Yeah, a couple thousand bucks.
Couple thousand.
You know, we got fined for $1,200 or $1,400 plus a 20% because we knew it was there, so they increased that. But the whole thing is less than $3,000. Not enough to stop a private corporation from doing business just like this. Now, one thing that has impacted, as Brett was saying, that some of these things were decided on them. You can't do that anymore. If we keep doing it, then they'll keep fining us each day that we operate in that violation. But fortunately, we're done. I mean, when we first got this mess two months ago, all we had to do was they said 3 weeks. We would be finished with Chinook spawning in 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Well, they're so slow now, you know, we may be done with summer steelhead spawning before they get done with it. But it's right now we're just handling fish in the trap, and we've got a window of flexibility if they will allow us back on the facility. Now that's potentially they will say you just can't get behind the fence, and then we don't have the capability of doing anything, which is not good. Mm-hmm. I just can't believe that the Oregon OSHA administration in Salem will allow this thing to go forward like this.
Yeah. So regardless of that, the things that need to be fixed that that inspector was concerned about were guarding on moving mechanical pieces,
yeah.
Shafts, gears,
the shaft guards,
and fall protection, right?
Shaft, yeah, fall protection.
Steps.
The not steps, they're fixing one. That.
They're going to fix that.
They're fabricating yeah. all that stuff. It was something we could have done.
Brett is going to.
No, no, you guys are doing it. You guys are doing it. I don't know if they're going to bolt them on or we're going to bolt them on, but they're just going to extend those steps so they're okay because it's the plywood that was there could move back and forth. It's a real simple fix.
And the guarding has been or is being ordered right now to cover up a lot
think,
of those.
I think they're going to have it done in a reasonable amount of time. It's just this guy is not being reasonable.
I sent all of that report to the Fall Creek team, development team for the new facility, by the way, just so you know.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah, it's stuff that
that's the way these
about.
Things improve. You keep
that's exactly
that's how we wrong in one it gets built into the next one. That's good.
Well, you know that's why we'll talk about the next item. That's why we knew that we were going to have some hits at Minto because they're similar systems.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have the same inspector.
Ooh, yeah,
we don't have the same inspector.
Minto has not been inspected recently by the same group from Oregon OSHA, correct? We're preemptively taking a jump on it.
I think he's had. I think we've had Oregon OSHA guys.
That's federal OSHA. I don't think we've had state OSHA.
You haven't had state ones, but you had a different inspector anyway coming out of Salem, right?
I guess so. Yes.
Yeah. It really depends on who is doing the inspecting.
Yeah, but there was a group out there.
The north is much nicer too, so they were more lenient over here.
Yeah. But Greg, there was a group out there, was it yesterday or the day before, Karina and somebody else from the Corps to take a look at some similar things that we have at Minto that were a problem at Foster. We're going to address them at Minto just to get ahead of the game and to get those done with.
Did you send those pictures to Andy?
I was told that Andy has had a copy for some time.
Oh,
but
he sent me some stuff this morning.
Okay. From Minto?
And yeah, I mean, basically, it's fairly basic stuff, just who's going to do it and who's going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, I feel like we've got a pretty good path forward in Foster. Mm-hmm. I think Minto is moving along. Yeah. It's the same.
Yeah, it's stuff, I think part of it was that Foster should not have occurred. And now that can of worms is open, now we're trying to mitigate for the response from Oregon OSHA, but because they're just slow. But, you know, so obviously we could have fixed it if we moved that ahead to priority list, and Minto, I think, has moved that up in the priority list because of what happened down at Foster. So,
right.
You know, another 3 months, this will be forgotten completely. And
hope so.
Are there any issues at Cougar that are overlapping?
It's to be determined. I think we had Fed OSHA that was up at Cougar and the PFFC. We're still waiting to hear the results of that trip. So I'd be shocked if there isn't. I mean, there's a lot of the shafts and stuff. I mean, there's no.
It was the first facility.
Yeah.
So, like you were saying, the compounding, everybody has benefited after Cougar.
I mean, the biggest advantage they have at Cougar is not ODFW employees. That's exactly what this is. Nothing to do with the Corps of Engineers. They are specifically citing Oregon employees for allowing our employees to work in this hazardous environment.
Okay.
They're fining us, not because of the facility, but because we let them work there.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's really the they don't have the ability to do that to federal employees.
Yeah, they have no jurisdiction at Foster. They can't.
They don't. They have no.
They can't shut.
What they can do is they can say, ODFW, you can't let your people walk on that site. That's all they can do.
Mm-hmm. Cougar and Fall Creek are nice because they're also not very fancy compared to these acclimation and holding facilities. The trap and haul facilities are really simple. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do have some similar OSHA issues, but yeah, it's nothing like those two. Nothing like that.
Yeah. My main concerns at Foster were not having to move that summer steelhead brute, being able to keep them there, and then having that ability to move winter steelhead when they start coming in.
Yeah.
And not just have them being collected for weeks and weeks and weeks in the pre-sort pool and not being able to run that crowder. But I think that we'll be able to
hopefully we can do that for them. We won't see winter steelhead for another couple months, will we?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I think they get it.
Andy's, I've been talking to Rob over there, the head of maintenance foreman, and
yeah,
we're in the process of ordering materials for the pre-sort pool, so that should get taken care of before we start spawning summer steelhead, and then we'd be able to, I guess that'll be taken care of within the next few weeks, we hope, and then the remaining crowders will be repaired before we start spawning summer steelhead, so we'll be able to get back to work in the trap here, hopefully in a couple weeks.
Great. That's awesome.
Bob was here yesterday at Minto, so I think, you know, some of the same fixes they're coming up with Brett will be, you know, easy to transfer over here to Minto.
Great. Cool. Okay. I think we got that one covered. Minto DEQ issues remain. So we have had a couple meetings internally with our office of counsel, and they're trying to help us understand the owner-operator relationship and who needs to apply for the new reapplication of the permit to include Minto in with Marion Forks, because it sounds like that is the only way to proceed according to DEQ. There's no way to get a separate permit for Minto itself because there's no permits allowed on the North Sanium, so you have to include it in an existing permit. And so it'll either be ODFW or it'll be the Corps, one way or another. I think that we could, between Greg, myself, you, we can start to fill out that permit and get the paperwork done regardless of whose signature goes on it. And we can start that work. But we're waiting to hear back from one of our attorneys on the final direction of which way to proceed. And then it sounds like you and Scott wanted to have a meeting to discuss this before we go to DEQ.
The perfect way to do this is for ODFW pick up Minto under the existing Marion Forks permit.
It's one way, yeah.
And we would continue to be the permit holder and accept that. The blockage there is that ODFW knows that we're in violation of Minto. And so we're not going to accept that responsibility. And so the fix is we pump the anesthetic to someplace else that's legal. We put a collection vault in of some kind for the spawning waste and done. And then we start operating because we've already satisfied, I think, the form one question.
Mm-hmm.
Minto falls under Marion Forks and we're happy to go down the road. Just we need to put that.
So really the only key is the spawning waste.
Spawning waste vault, yeah. And that was already lined out in the original construction plans and it's didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know physically how difficult that would be to do. It's tight in there. So I don't know,
mm-hmm,
you know, where they could put the containment vault like that. And Greg, do you have any idea what kind of volume that it'd have to have?
You'd want about a 3,000 gallon tank. To me, the easiest would be vault where the water enters the abatement pond. It's already pumped to there, but you would have to have a hydraulically sealed vault that, you know, you could pump out after a day of spawning.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, either that or you're gonna, you know, cut concrete and redirect all that spawning waste to the existing vault that takes the anesthetic tank. Either way, you basically have to contain that so that we could pump it out.
How big is the anesthetic tank?
Abatement pond or at the anesthetic vault.
How big's your anesthetic vault?
3,000.
Oh, okay.
I think the other option that we've talked about a little bit is we wrestle with DEQ about releasing spawning waste into the river. Because
it's absolutely absurd
to me that we can't do that, even though 100 yards downstream we have that occurring naturally. And we're also throwing carcasses into the river.
Guaranteed, so that's, we've been arguing that one for
discharge
10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense. It's like the food processing plants down in Astoria can flush fish processing waste into the river, and we can't let anything that would slightly color a piece of water,
mm-hmm,
go in. We dump thousands and thousands of pounds of salmon, but we can't release one tablespoon of mucus. It makes absolutely no sense. They will look at us and say, this makes absolutely no sense, but no.
These are the rules. Yep. So we should hear back from our office of counsel sometime this week or early next week, and I'll be in touch with you,
okay,
Scott.
We've been talking to Tim Yeah. The DQ has
Tim's been really good.
His recommendations are pretty rational.
Mm-hmm. He's been great.
But it's the fact that we've identified specifically what's going to be a violation. We've argued with them for years and years. DEQ will not back down. You're not going to get a permission to do that. And so here we are. You know.
What were the three issues? Anesthetic disposal, spawning waste, and there was one other.
Well, there was a question somewhere about formalin dilution. We solved that by pumping that stuff back into the tail race. We can do that. We can't do it. The abatement pond's not big enough to do it.
Okay.
But...
And the anesthetic isn't a big deal because it goes to a vault anyways. We just into a so-called bioswale, and the bioswale we have is inadequate. So it already has a pump in it and hose. It's pretty easy to get rid of the anesthetic water. So it's basically just a spawning waste.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, that's where we're at on that one.
Yeah, it's the fix is not complicated. It's just a question of we got to spend the money to do it.
Yeah.
And always a question, who's going to pay for it? I know who's going to pay for it. So you're going to pay for it.
We always pay for it. I always pay for your stuff, John. All right. Anything else? That's all we have on the agenda.
I have one.
Yes, Doug.
I've been kind of out of the loop because of the adult fish collection facility season, but where are we on lamprey disposition as far as... Like, I literally, after the first lamprey showed up at Fall Creek, I literally called the tribes with a fish in my hand saying, what do you want off of this fish?
Off the top of my head, what I believe we had decided upon in the disposition meeting was that if there was more than one or two, then we would rally the group and have a discussion.
Okay, so...
And if not, it was return below the dam.
Go below
the collection facility.
Okay.
Ours was to put above Minto.
Yeah, I talked to the district biologist. He wanted me to haul it, the first fish.
Above
Fall Creek. I called. He was on the other phone.
Okay.
No, I'm not kidding.
I might be wrong. It might be specific.
Yeah.
Each of the blocks on that disposition spreadsheet on what to do with lamprey and other resident fishes. So, yeah, we can just review that.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. That's so where it is.
I will find our formal copy of that and send it to you.
And I think you did, but I didn't know if we'd gone anywhere forward with that.
How many lamprey did you get?
Four at Fall Creek.
Yeah. Four.
Yeah. Were they relatively close together, time-wise, when you caught them, or more spaced out?
Sure, yeah. Less than a month apart for the whole run. Starting April 9th, ending May 4th, but that doesn't mean that they weren't there. Mm-hmm. But that's when they entered the fight traps.
Okay.
One thing to keep in mind with Fall Creek is that Grand Ronde is outplanting.
Yeah,
there like might 200 be 200 some.
There might be
the fish up there each year.
Olfactory whatever the MSC signal.
Mm-hmm. Just as a side note, some people have talked about using aniseeds or macropithalmia to kind of seed some of these LPSs.
Oh, yeah.
Layers, like putting them into a rest box.
Oh, yeah.
Or even just taking adults and putting them into a rest box.
Yeah, the tribe's way into that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Or the Great Lakes with their attracting these sea lamprey.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's a synthetic, too, isn't it?
Like they've been able to synthesize
Yeah, I guess adults and...
With that LPS.
And the juveniles, I guess both can send signals downstream.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Doug. Anything else? Anything else from folks on the phone? Nope. All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next month.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
See you.
See
you. I didn't send that to you, so I'll give you that one, but I'll send you an electric one.
Oh, sweet. Thanks.
What are they going to do with this phone that works?
I'd like to keep it in here.
That's what I would too. I got to find out. I will check with Scott, and because when he shared with me this morning, that's what's happened everywhere. I think they got three of them.
Yeah.
At the last minute, so you know it's says if you buy them at the dollar store, they don't work.
Gary up